The first time Isaac tried to warn me, I woke up to the sound of tapping. Before my eyes completely snapped into focus, I studied the half-form standing in the dark. The empty bed next to mine where Isaac used to sleep and beyond the bed. My one window. The slight movement of the moonlit curtain and the thing that looked back at me from the curtain. The dark stain of a shadow. An eclipse with a human shape. In the moment it takes my eyes to adjust, I listen to its tapping on the glass. I climb out of bed, sliding on sleepwalker's feet, a gnawing itch in the back of my mind telling me what I already knew was there at the window. I throw open the curtain. Nothing but the indifferent dark. My brother Isaac was all bony angles and mop-top hair and jewel big eyes. He disappeared one day in late September. I remember the day, clear as anything. The rumor in the leaves and air with an oncoming bite. On the night before it happened, in the secrecy of our room, Isaac tells me about his discovery. "I call it a fairy gate," he told me, eyes deadlocked onto mine, twinkling across the dark between our beds. It was 5 years ago. I was the only person in the world he trusted to keep his secrets, and I loved him for that. The more I think about that night, the more I come to realize how unlike myself, he was to go off into the woods alone, comfortable as he was exploring his books. He told me once that if he could, he'd build himself a fortress out of books. He would run away to that place if he could. This was his little conspiracy. He conspired with me one more on that night he told me about the fairy gate. He told me it was the entrance to that fortress, the trees themselves sculpted out of loose paper. I remember the last thing he told me. In the morning, Isaac was gone. The window was wide open, curtain billowing in the wind, waving a lonesome goodbye. Sometimes I wish I could have known my brother, grown up with him, protected him, loved him, be loved by him. Then I remember the eyes. I remember and I hope to God every day that he stays dead. All I have now is hope. I still can't shake the feeling of cold hands clawing inside my ribcage or the feeling of eyes pouring out of the hungry woods. There were search parties in those first few days. Many people prayed for us, for Isaac. Few of them even cried. There was an unspoken agreement that the worst was to be expected. In those early days, I would skirt down hallways at school through a relentless torrent of whispering. Hushed conversations between adults, barbed by nasty rumors, and trickling down to the vicious mouths of their children. A kidnapping, some said. Neighbors must have planned it for weeks. Others saw him run off to escape a drunken beating from our father. A few kids swore that he never left. He was locked away in the basement, my basement, wrapped up tight as a Christmas gift. Isaac was a shadow that loomed over my house. My parents stopped speaking. To me. To each other. They just stared off into the distance. Hard lines set around their mouth. Faces carved out of marble. Footsteps ringing hollow through empty halls. Isaac came back to the window every night. I didn't try to open the curtain again, but he never stopped. The tapping had become another part of the house. Something to let fade into the background and something to fall asleep to. But Isaac... Isaac would not let himself be forgotten so easily. I lay awake one night when the rhythmic tap, tap, tap went still. And sudden quiet was so much more alarming just knowing it was coming from his restless dead hands. I held my breath. I waited out that silence, listening for him, for anything. I know it was a silly thing to do, but I closed my eyes. I shut myself off from the room and rested in the closet of my own body. When Isaac struck the window, my heart leapt into my throat. I went up to the curtain like he wanted. I peeled it back, a tiny knot of cracks nestled there in the middle of the glass. His voice came floating into the room from outside, crackling like static. To this day, I still try to push the words aside, but his voice still crawls into the back of my head. The voice, and with it, a new sensation like 1,000 eyes, stalking me from the trees. 2 of them, always belonging to Isaac. I never told my parents about the feeling in the woods. All the same, I was forbidden from going outside. The sole exception to this rule was the walk to and from school. Week after worthless week, these walks became like any other routine. There was one afternoon the sun was belting a brilliant song from a clear, cold sky. I left my mind to wander along the ghosts of leaves pressed into the sidewalk like wet hands. Something about the way the colors bled into the pavement as a final, fragile signature. The spaces in between houses getting longer the closer I got to my house, until the mailboxes became little outposts in between long stretches of trees. Every now and again, a car would roar past me just to disappear further up the road. My own mailbox came into view. I marched up the driveway towards the rear of the house, up and up the steps of my porch, then I remember all of a sudden my hand stopped just shy of the doorknob. I didn't dare move them closer. The muscles in my neck tightened. My other hand hangs tense by my side, fist clenching open and shut. I feel the eyes on my back as I turn to face the woods. A pale figure standing scarecrow still, just inside the shade of the tree line. But I recognize the curly brown hair. I pause for long enough to recall a flashlight in the kitchen. I rush inside to grab it and was back on the porch in no time. Scarecrow, already gone. In my grip, the flashlight becomes the hilt of a sword. The last thing I hear before I follow the scarecrow into the woods was the crash of the porch door in full swing, and my mother calling out to me. Her voice, a thin passenger, carried off in the wind. Isaac was well ahead of me by then. I ran until the noises of the town, the bustle of traffic, the orchestra of noise that was the ironworks, was swallowed up by the trees. I darted past, grasping limbs and treacherous roots, coming to rest against the elbow of a quick-moving stream. The sun, half-hidden behind the canopy, cast a web of dappling light and shade over my face as I ran beside the crumpling bank. Underneath the chirp and sigh of the stream, the silence of the surrounding forest swelled by the atmospheric pressure. Icicles clutched in my stomach. The tree towered over me like crooked teeth. By the time I came into view of my brother's discovery, my lungs were heavy with sand. The shallow of stones met between the banks of the stream, the far side of which was guarded by a pair of gnarled birch trees. Twin white trunks, each bent towards the other, crowns twisting together into a narrow archway as if the trees were holding hands, as if to form a gate. As I moved closer, the scarecrow flickered inside the open arms of the fairy gate. From so close, I could see that his hands were blackened with soil. I could see his face. In place of eyes, sank 2 cavernous holes, and where his chest should be, a red wound opened. Dirt came crumbling out of his mouth as he spoke, the words formless, impossible, but still the same.
Shadows walk.
Isaac turned and vanished into the fairy gate. It stood before me in the beam of my flashlight, beckoning. I flew across the stream after my brother and through the arms of the gate. It didn't feel anything like the embrace of a fortress walls. It's more like walking into the mouth of hell. A faint dirt path stretched away behind the gate, with rough grass whispering out from the ground. Isaac left no footprints in the dirt. Not far from the stream, the low ceiling of branches opened up into a secret glen, a halo of green 100 feet wide underneath a blue ceiling of sky. The air was warm, and all the leaves surrounding were green. Scores of wildflowers bloomed, swayed around my ankles, frozen into perpetual summer. I dared to take a step into the garden. Isaac was nowhere in sight. In the corner of the garden was a circle of charred earth. I took another step, bent my head closer. A patch of bare ground no larger than I was. My gaze fell onto a white sapling growing from the barren scar. The closer I crept towards the sapling, fixated by it, pulling into it like a rogue plant, the less I wanted to believe what it was. I was looking at a human arm. Pushing up neatly into the shoulder, the ground surrounding it having been torn up with claw marks, and beside the sapling arm, underneath the shade of the flesh-blossoming hand. Crowning from the torn soil was the top half of a head, row of teeth peeking out just above the dirt, a few fingers already starting to sprout next to the head. This is not a burial, I thought, looking down at the grim work of the garden. This is a birth. The hands all bony angles, the head topped with brown curls, and the eyes, jewel blue eyes. The sapling arm twitched once, shot outward with bone-breaking speed as it caught me by the ankle. I stumbled backwards onto the ground, struggling for release from the vice grip. It dragged me closer. I caught sight of its eyes and, oh God, the wet sucking sound they made as they rolled in their wet sockets to look at me. A new surge of panic overflowed into my blood. I pulled myself away from the wicked thing, scrambling to my feet, and I ran out of the garden as fast as my legs could carry me. My parents had been waiting for me inside the house. The sigh of relief at the sight of me running through the door, filthy and shaking, was the most beautiful sound in the world. My mother helped me close. She let the tears roll down her cheeks. Even as Isaac's warning was still ringing in my ears. Sleep didn't find me that night. The more I thought about it, and I do think about it every night, running through the encounter over and over again in my head, the more certain I am of Isaac's last words. His true last words whispered to me through his broken mouth all those years ago. Shadows walk. You know, sometimes I dream of cold hands reaching up from the glen, fleshing into gruesome trees, paper white skin, blue veins, growing into a forest to strangle my brother's skeleton body, pushing out of the ground, out of the grinning mouth of his skull, tangled around his body like roots, around his spine and his eye sockets. But Isaac didn't return that night, or any other night. I followed the stream every day afterwards for weeks, as Isaac must have done hundreds of times before me. Now it just keeps going till the water empties out of the sharp edge of a hill. Doesn't matter how many times I double back, retrace my steps, all of a sudden, unable to breathe. Stepping Stone Bridge is nowhere to be found. Ferry gate's gone. So is my brother. The only thing I can do now is wait. Hey there, kids. It's me, Mr. Creepypasta, and I just wanted to say thank you for watching today's video. I want to try to wrap this video up quick, so I'm going to let you know about a couple of things real quick. First one is, I'm going on tour. If you want to check out more information about that, head over to creepypasta.shofetti.com. That's creepypasta.shofetti.com. If you want to support the show, head over to patreon.com/Mr. Creepypasta. And if you'd like to buy some nice warm tea for a dark and stormy story time, check out etsy.com/shop/ivorymonocletea. Sweet dreams, kids.